Gyanatimanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Mitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sahutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakan Vitamscha Namarom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharane Nirvisesya Sunyavadi Paschacharya Satarane Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Phalam Sukamukaram Ritadravasam Yitam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Mahodahora Sikabhuvi Babu Kaha Narayanam Namaskritya Nanam Cheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayat Nashta Presu Abadresu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Slokir Bhaktir Bhavati Naistiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Canto 4, chapter 23, text 14, Maharaj Prithu's going back to home. Sampidya Payam Prashnipyam Vayam Utsarayan Chanai Nabhyam Kosteshu Avastapya Grid Ura Kanta Shishani Sampidya Payam Parsnipyam Vayam Utsarayan Chanai Nabhyam Kosteshu Avastapya Dura Kanta Shishani Sampidya Payam Parsnipyam Vayam Utsarayan Chanai Nabhyam Kosteshu Avastapya Dura Kanta Shishani ladies.
Sampidya,
by blocking
Payam,
the door of the anus.
Parshnibhyam,
by the calves.
Vayum,
the air which goes up.
Utsarayan,
pushing upwards.
Shanai,
gradually.
Nabhyam,
by the navel.
Koshteshu,
in the heart and in the throat.
Avastapya,
fixing.
Grit,
in the heart.
Uraha,
upward.
Kanta,
throat.
Shirshani,
between the two eyebrows.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada.
When Maharaj Prithu practiced a particular yogic sitting posture, he blocked the doors of his anus with his ankles, pressed his right and left calves, and gradually raised his life air upward, passing it on to the circle of his navel, up to his heart and throat, and finally pushed it upward to the central position between his two eyebrows. Please repeat. When Maharaj Prithu practiced a particular yogic sitting posture.
He blocked the doors of his anus
with his ankles.
Pressed his right and left calves.
And gradually raised his life air upward.
Passing it on to the circle of his navel.
Up to his heart and throat.
And finally pushed it upward.
To the central position.
Between his two eyebrows.
Purport. The sitting posture described herein is called Muktasana. In the yoga process, after following the strict regulative principles controlling sleeping, eating, and mating, one is allowed to practice the different sitting postures. The ultimate aim of yoga is to enable one to give up this body according to his own free will. One who has attained the ultimate summit of yoga practice can live in the body as long as he likes, or as long as he is not completely perfect, leave the body to go anywhere within or outside the universe. Some yogis leave their bodies to go to the higher planetary systems and enjoy the material facilities therein. However, intelligent yogis do not wish to waste their time within this material world at all. They do not care for the material facilities in higher planetary systems, but are interested in going directly to the spiritual sky, back home, back to Godhead. From the description in this verse, it appears that Maharaj Prithu had no desire to promote himself to the higher planetary systems. He wanted to return home immediately, back to Godhead. Although Maharaj Prithu stopped all practice of mystic yoga after realizing Krishna consciousness, he took advantage of his previous practice and immediately placed himself in the Brahma-Bhuta platform in order to accelerate his return to Godhead. The aim of this particular system of asana, known as the sitting posture for liberation, or Muktasana, is to attain success in Kundalini chakra.
and gradually raise the life from the Muladhara chakra to the Swadhisthana chakra, then to the Manipura chakra, the Anahata chakra, the Vishuddha chakra, and finally to the Ajna chakra. When the yogi reaches the Ajna chakra, between the two eyebrows, he is able to penetrate the Brahmarandra, or the hole in his skull, and go to any planet that he desires, up to the spiritual kingdom of Vaikuntha or Krishna Loka. The conclusion is that one has to come to the Brahma-Bhuta stage for going back to Godhead. However, those who are in Krishna consciousness or who are practicing Bhakti Yoga, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, can return to Godhead without even practicing the Muktasana process. The purpose of Muktasana practice is to come to the Brahma-Bhuta stage. For without being on the Brahma-Bhuta stage, one cannot be promoted to the spiritual sky. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 14.26, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati chaitan brahmabhuya kalpate. The bhakti yoga practicing, the bhakti yogi practicing bhakti yoga is always situated on the Brahmabhuta stage, brahmabhuya kalpate. If a devotee is able to continue in the Brahmabhuta platform, he enters the spiritual sky automatically after death and returns to Godhead. Consequently, a devotee need not feel sorry for not having practiced the Kundalini Yoga chakra or for not penetrating the six chakras one after another. As far as Maharaj Prithu was concerned, he had already practiced this process, and since he did not want to wait for the time when his death would occur naturally, he took advantage of the Sat Chakra penetration process and thus gave up the body according to his own free will and immediately entered the spiritual sky. When Maharaj Prithu practiced a particular yogic sitting posture, he blocked the doors of his anus with his ankles, pressed his right and left calves, and gradually raised his life air upward, pushing it to the circle of his navel, up to his heart and throat, and finally pushed it upward to the central position between his two eyebrows. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So today is a special day. It's Vasant Panchami, as we all know. This is the first day of spring. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that of the seasons, he is the flower-bearing spring. So this is a day when nice flower offerings are made. And the color yellow, which represents brightness and regrowth and regeneration, is offered to the deities. So we'll be seeing them at 8 o'clock this morning, a little bit later than the normal time. And today is also Saraswati Puja. Again, the same idea, an opening, a brightness, an illumination. So that comes from Saraswati, or she's the channel, if you like, for knowledge, goddess of learning. If you get some learning, you become enlightened. So it's kind of synonymous with spring. Some growth and recharging there. And also, you know, Devim Saraswatim Vyasam, Tato Jayamu Dirayat. We also pray to Saraswati so that our reading and understanding of the Bhagavatam can expand. So although we don't worship Saraswati particularly individually, worship is automatically included in the reading of the Bhagavatam, in the process of Bhakti Yoga, in the worship of Radha Krishna. We don't have to worship the demigods separately, but they're all included. As soon as we worship Krishna, everybody else is happy, and we get the blessings of all the demigods. So Saraswati Puja, you'll see, is going on all over Bengal. They get quite excited about it. Of course, in Bengal, they get excited about any opportunity to observe any kind of puja. It doesn't matter who it is. But at least today is nice. And today is also the appearance day of Srimati Vishnu Priya, the appearance of Pundarik Vijayaniti, Raghunandan Thakur, and Raghunath Das Goswami. So we can't talk about all of them individually. That would take up two or three classes. But it's their appearance day. And the disappearance day of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who's a very important acharya in our line, who actually came from this district. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is from Nadia district, and he was brought up in Murshidabad. He left home at an early age, went to live in Vrindavan, and of course became one of the greatest scholars in our line. So, here it's described about Prithu Maharaj picking up again on his yogic practice, because he was already expert in that, then naturally he utilized that in his Krishna conscious activity. That's called dovetailing. Prabhupada always said that we don't have to give up anything, but rather just utilize what we know in Krishna's service, and then it becomes perfect. Even if you don't know it completely. But imperfection can be accepted in Krishna consciousness as long as it's done sincerely. The story of Raghunandan is very interesting. I think his father was Mukunda Dutt. So he was only 5 years old. They had a deity of Gopinath. And his father had to go somewhere for some reason or another. He told his five-year-old son, now you have to do the puja today. You have to make the offering to the Lord. He's only 5 years old, so obviously he couldn't have a full knowledge of what he was doing. But his father showed him all the different ingredients and told him, now at the right time you make sure these get offered, then that will be nice. So he went away. So then the boy was left. The time came for making the offering. And he went there, he took the ingredients, he said the prayers, and nothing happened. He was looking and he was thinking, I've offered the ingredients to the Lord, but he's not taking them. What will happen? My dad will become angry with me. He'll think that I haven't made the offering. So he was getting an anxiety and he was thinking, what to do. So he was a small child. He didn't know anything else, so he started crying. And he pleaded to Gopinath that you have to take this offering. If you don't take the offering, my father will be angry with me. So Lord Gopinath, he was very merciful and he thought, this young boy is making this offering. He doesn't understand what the process is. But he's crying, what can I do? So I have to show him that I've accepted the offering. So immediately he ate everything and there was nothing left. Then the boy thought, oh, very nice. Now, Gopinath ji has accepted the offering, my father will be very happy. So later on in the day, his father came back and he said, did you make the offering? Oh, yes. Oh, very good. So bring the prasad. What prasad? There's nothing left. The Lord ate everything. So his father went and he looked, he saw there was nothing there. What's going on here? And then he couldn't figure out what the truth of the matter was, because he knew his son was very innocent, young boy, and he never told lies. So, he was trying to understand, could the Lord have actually taken, physically all the offering? So then a few days later, he was still pondering that. And then he was thinking, all right, we'll try again. So again, he told his son, I'm going somewhere, you make the offering. But instead of going somewhere, he hid. And he was just peering around. And then he saw his son come in the deity room. He made the offering. And then immediately the Lord began to eat. And he was eating everything. And then at a certain point, he had half a laddu still It was half eaten, the rest was in his hand. And the Lord glanced over and he saw Mukunda was hiding and observing what was going on. So immediately he stopped. So in that way then, that deity is still worshipped. He has a half a laddu in his hand. And the father could understand, Raghunandan, you know, this is, he's a very special devotee. At 5 years old, the Lord is reciprocating him in such a nice way. So that's Krishna consciousness. Of course, we may not get to that point ourselves, but at least that's a good example of what Prabhupada's describing in this verse, in the purport. That young boy, he didn't really know exactly what he was doing or what was supposed to happen, but he did it out of pure devotion. And Krishna therefore reciprocated and accepted, you know, whatever offering that he made. So even a young boy, 5 years old, can become perfect in the process of bhakti yoga. We don't have to go through all of this mechanical process as Prithu Maharaj did. Of course, Prithu Maharaj was living in an entirely different age, Satyuga. Everything was very sattvic. Everything, you know, was very calm, undisturbed, unpolluted. And in that pure atmosphere, then such practices can take place. This Kundalini chakra or Kundalini yoga, raising the life airs up through the body, blocking off all the holes. And then gradually, I think there are five main airs within the body. And the soul is situated on those airs, or at least the energy of the soul goes out through those airs, and those airs make the body work. The senses become activated. So in the process of Kundalini yoga, one gathers up and withdraws the energy of the soul. It's retreated. The senses are shut down. The mind is withdrawn, the intellect is withdrawn, and one comes to this point of being absolutely fixed in samadhi on the life airs or on the source of energy within the body. And then gradually, up through these different chakras or energy points, if you like, then the life airs are raised up, the soul goes up, and he finally comes up to this point between the eyebrows. And in that way, then, Prabhupada says here that a yogi can choose what he wants to do. Somebody who's perfect, he can actually remain indefinitely within his body. I remember when we were at the Kumbh Mela in 1977, Prabhupada was there at least for a few days. And, of course, many millions of people come there, ordinary people, to get some benefit. They want this ambition of going to the heavenly planets. They've heard that some nectar has fallen there. And if you bathe in the rivers on these particular dates, you become eligible to go to the heavenly planets and you can enjoy. So that's the karmis. They go there in millions for that benefit. Also, though, we see so many yogis are there. They're not going there for the same purpose, or at least most of them. Some of them maybe, but many of the others are not. And Prabhupada told us that actually many, or some of those yogis, they may be 400-500 years old. Yeah, they look just ordinary, 35, 40, 50 years old. But they're actually 400 or 500 years old. And the reason why is because they're able to remain within their bodies in yogic trance. And they're not expiate any energy mentally or physically. They just simply remain and they practice controlling the life airs within the body and they remain silent. And that way then they try to meditate on whatever their conception of the ultimate truth is, because the main point is to try to find out the super soul within the heart and connect with him. Of course, due to a lack of information sometimes, even if they become expert in that mechanical process. And we can understand just how very difficult that is. Yeah. impossible actually in this age to perform, except maybe for a few exclusive personalities. But in their practice, then, you know, they want to come to the point of liberation. This is the Muktasana that Prithu Maharaj is performing here, the asana, the sitting posture, which enables one to come to the point of freedom. But what is that freedom? That depends on their education. It's unfortunately, or sometimes anyway, the mystic yogis, they practice this, but they still have this impersonal idea. And so when or if they actually see the super soul within the heart, because of their avishuddha buddhaya, their slightly polluted or impure intelligence, they make the mistake of thinking that that's me. Yeah, there's this personality within the heart, and they identify on the platform of oneness that there's this super soul of all, and that's me. I am also the same as the super soul. So there's a kind of like an impersonal liberation. And then they attempt to leave the body and merge into Brahman. Of course, that's better than going up to the heavenly planets. If you go up to the heavenly planets, you may get distracted and think that the material world is enjoyable. And then again, come back down again when your period of time is over in those planets of the pious living entities. Then, you know, at a certain point when your Sukriti has been used up, then again you have to come back down to this Bhumandal platform, this middle level platform, into the world of work and endeavor. And then you have to work again very hard to disentangle yourself or qualify yourself for going upwards. You know, Urdhvam Gacchanti Sattvastah. If you're in the mode of goodness, you can go up. Madhye Tisthanti Rajasah. If you're on the platform of Rajas, then you stay on this middle platform. You don't go up, you don't go down. And Adol Gacchanti Tamasah, if you're in the mode of ignorance, you go down to a lower platform. So that going up, going down, staying in the middle, that business is all going on planets similar to this one. In the heavenly planets, you don't have to work. You simply are receiving the results of your previous pious activities. And of course, in the hellish planets, you're too busy suffering to think about getting out. You just have to wait until the time of your release. But on the middle platform, you can make a choice. So that's the human platform, where you get this opportunity to become educated about the real nature of the soul or the self, and the nature of this material world, what is above, what is below, what is the right work to be done, and what time there is to do it. Yeah. These are the topics of the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, Jiva, the living beings, Prakriti, material nature, karma, activity, and kala, time. And if you know these five topics and how they interact, then you actually become fit for liberation. If you don't know these things, then you'll not get out of this material world. It remains a big entanglement. So at least the yogis anyway, in their practice, they've understood this is not a good place to be, let me get out. And this is one process, the chakra, Kundalini chakra process, very, you know, mechanically, very stringently. Prabhupada says here that you can't even begin to do the asanas until you have followed the strict regulative principles controlling sleeping, eating, and mating. That's the prerequisite. Then you can actually sit down and start doing your asanas. And then you can do your pranayams and then all the rest of it till you come up to this point of samadhi. So when you read this description, it shows how ludicrous the so-called yoga practices that's going on now. It's been sweeping the world for the last 20 or 30 years. Indians are very proud. Oh, our system of yoga is now, you know, being taken up all over the world. Big movie stars are doing it, you know, and so many other, you know, personalities doing yoga every day. But what is that yoga? Are they actually strictly regulating their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending? No. They're doing their yoga for the exact opposite. Not to withdraw from those activities, but to indulge in them more and more. So it's just become, you know, a facsimile, just a fake counterpart, that's all. It's very unfortunate that people are being cheated by so-called yoga teachers, you know, that the practice of asana is simply for keeping the body healthy, that's all. Healthy body, healthy mind, go out and have as much sex as you like, yeah, help you recover from all the drugs that you've been taking, and, you know, go out with great energy and earn more and more money and, you know, become an enjoyer in the material world. That is not yoga. Yeah. Yoga is quite the opposite. The whole purpose and practice is to withdraw from this material world totally and completely, so that not one fragment remains of any kind of attachment or identification with the body, or with the bodies of one's own body, or with the bodies of others, or with this material world. Complete and utter removal. Muktasana, this is the goal. Yeah, that you shut down, so there's no more sensual activity whatsoever. There's no more mental activity whatsoever. There's no more intellectual activity whatsoever in connection with any part of this material world. And then when you can hold that, if you can even get to that position, then you have to remain there. Then you have to remain there. That's samadhi. That's being fixed up. And then at that point, then you can choose where you want to go. And of course, if you're intelligent, you want to get out of the material world altogether. So, Prithu Maharaj could do it because he was already practiced, he was expert. In the course of his practice, he fully realized Krishna consciousness. So he knew then that at that point, that practice was not in any way necessary anymore. Because Krishna consciousness means activity. It means sensual, mental, and intellectual, transcendental activity. So the withdrawal and the shutdown of, you know, all of these activities is only a temporary phase. When you come to the platform of Krishna consciousness, then everything becomes activated once more. We have to withdraw from the material world, so we shut down all these activities. But that's not the goal. That's not the end position, that you simply, you know, become like a non-entity with no activity. Activity in the material world is there because there's activity on the spiritual platform. It's just been enacted in the wrong medium. So we have to withdraw from the medium, but we don't actually give up the sense of individuality and activity on the transcendental platform. So when one comes to the platform of true Krishna consciousness, and he sees that everything is part of Krishna, Krishna is in everything, everything is in Krishna, then he sees that everything is actually spiritual. He understands actually there's no such thing as material anymore. Everything is spiritual. And everything, being part of Krishna, can be used for the pleasure of Krishna, including oneself. And in fact, to not offer oneself for service to the Lord on that level of realization shows an imperfection of understanding. Yeah, to not do anything, to not be motivated to serve Krishna in different ways and engage in one's rasa with him, means that one's understanding is incomplete. Yeah, to just come to the level of Brahman, you know, where, you know, there's just this nothing happening. You're just being, but nothing, you know, no symptoms of being are there. That is not the goal, and that is an imperfect understanding of mukti. So therefore, Lord Brahma, he said, when he, after the Brahma Vimohana Leela, he saw Krishna in the forest with his, you know, cowherd paraphernalia, and his friends, and he's got his hands sticking out with some yogurt dribbling through the cracks in his fingers, and he's just this little kid running around the forest in Vrindavan. But he's saying there are some people who think they've become liberated, they've done all their austerities and penances, and they think that they've become liberated from this material world. But unless they actually take shelter of your lotus feet, unless they understand who you are, you know, this small child running around the forest of Vrindavan, then I think that they're not perfect in their understanding. Yeah, Abhishuddha Buddhaya, they have an impure understanding or impure intelligence. One has to come to the platform of understanding the personality of Godhead and understanding that our personality is not dispensed with in the spiritual process. Rather, it's simply liberated. That's what we're liberating, is the self, the eternal individual self. We're liberating ourselves from material entanglement so we can enter into the sphere of real activity, eternal activity, spiritual activity, ananda. That is the bliss. There's no question of ananda until you take up spiritual activity. Yeah. We see many of these impersonal yogis and gurus, they give themselves so many different names. Yeah, Muktananda, Satchidananda, this ananda, that ananda. But they have no concept of service to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, there's actually no question of ananda. Without activity, there is no ananda. Without the exchange of love between the lover and the beloved, there's no question of ananda. So this idea of, you know, muktasana, and then you become muktananda, you know, by merging into the Brahman, it's all bogus. That's not ananda. And after some time, again, they have to come down. Aruya Krishtrena Parampadam. You have to come down again to this material world, because there's no ananda. So the real ananda is, just as we read there, Raghunanda. Raghunanda. Yeah, this little kid, 5 years old, offering to the Lord, crying, you know, why don't you take it? Please take it. You know, and the Lord reciprocating, and then the boy's very happy. He's innocent. And 5 years old, he can't expect to sit down and explain the entire philosophy of Vedanta Sutra or the Bhagavatam. But he just knows that Krishna is the Lord. I'm his servant. I have to offer everything to him for his pleasure. That's all. That simple understanding exceeds all of this yoga practice. When we come to that understanding, you know, that Krishna is everything, Krishna knows everything, Krishna is everywhere, Krishna is in control of everything, that means that there's nowhere where I can go that Krishna doesn't know where to find me. Yeah. He sees everything that I'm doing. He's fully in control. There's no way that I can get out of his grasp. So if I understand that, really, then what choice do I have? I have to surrender, that's all. Yeah. Today, Krishna, from this day on, I am yours, and you are mine. That's the devotional mentality. That is the platform of real mukti, or liberation, when we fully take shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. So this is nice. It's nice to read about, you know, all these practices here, but as Prabhupada says there, where is it, that a devotee need not feel sorry for not having practiced Kundalini chakra or not penetrating the six chakras one after another. Yeah, it's not necessary. The life of a devotee, mat prananatastu sevanapara. The Lord is the life of a devotee. So every aspect of a devotee's life is dedicated to the pleasure of the Lord. And therefore, these mechanical processes are not necessary and not required, and are in fact quite repulsive to a devotee. Yeah, a devotee just wants to be able to serve Krishna under any time, place, and circumstance. And that can be done with or without a material body. devotional service goes on eternally on all platforms. So even if one physically can't do something, it doesn't matter. Internally, one can worship the Lord, one can chant the Hare Krishna mantra. I had a conversation once with Malati, you know, our Malati Dasi, from the early days, San Francisco Malati. So she was saying that at one point she actually, you know, was in such dire straits physically that she went into a coma. And everybody thought that she was going to die. So the devotees came to the hospital. There was no hope that was given by the hospital authorities. You know, she was in this coma. She was, you know, about to go. That was it. And there was no apparent sign of anything. Yeah, externally, there was no... She wasn't responding to any stimulus of any kind. So she told me that, you know, the devotees came. She was not aware of the fact that they were there. But when they started chanting, she heard the holy names. She couldn't perceive anything else, nothing. But she heard the chanting, she heard the holy names, and that actually brought her back to full consciousness and, you know, back to, you know, active activity. And then, you know, from then she went to New Vrindavan. And when she was there, she went just for a visit. The devotees had invited her. And then just as she was about to leave, she said she went to Srila Prabhupada's Murti to offer obeisances. She was going back to New York. And she heard Prabhupada say very clearly, "Don't leave here." So that was it. She left everything, immediately stayed there. And of course the rest, as they say, is history. But history is always going on, being made. But that's one example, yeah, of a devotee being helped by the Lord. The perception of one's relationship with Krishna is permanent. It cannot be lost. Yeah? Krishna says that. That whatever advancement that we make on this path, that is assured. Yeah? Even if we don't become fully Krishna conscious, in the next lifetime, a devotee is allowed to continue and takes up where he left off. So even within this lifetime, sometimes we see a devotee may have a struggle. Sometimes they may get a little distracted. Sometimes Maya may appear to try to capture them and take them away from their active service. But we should always remember that Krishna is within their heart, and whatever sincere service that devotee has done is permanent. It will not be lost. Krishna does not abandon his devotees. So if they have some weakness or, you know, some other tribulation, which appears to temporarily stop up their service, we should always remember that Krishna within the heart is still there, related. And is always working to try to figure out how to bring this devotee back to my transcendental service and lotus feet. So temporarily these blips may happen, but we should not judge a devotee on the basis of some temporary fall down. Yeah, we should see what the service is and understand the nature of devotional service, that it is eternal and that it is never lost. So it's getting very late. 5 minutes, we're going to greet the deities. Any really quick question or comment? Sorry, Swapapu.
Yesterday we had our final dissertations in Bhakti Vaibhav and the subject of the relationship between the permanence of devotional service, which you just referred to, and the capacity of Vaishnava Parad to uproot devotional service came up. Could you discuss a little bit?
Yeah. Well, Vaishnava Parad is different from a regular fall down, regular fall down. Fall down means accidentally. You know, for some time, I once heard Prabhupada say that Ajameel, the Ajamil in the Bhagavatam, that his fall down was accidental. And I was kind of puzzled because, of course, you know, from a young age he fell. His whole life he was fallen. And, he was doing all kinds of abominable activities, even murdering and thieving and so many things to support himself and his prostitute wife. And then, you know, just at the very last gasp, literally, at the very last gasp, somehow or another, you know, he was rescued. So I couldn't really understand, you know, why Prabhupada referred to his fall down as being accidental when it was practically his whole life. And Prabhupada told me, he said, because in the beginning, he tried to control his mind. It was just a short period between being a Paka Brahmana and then falling. When he understood what he was doing was wrong, he tried to control his mind, but then he got overwhelmed. So Prabhupada said that was an accidental fall down. However, there's another way that a person can fall from devotional service, which is permanent. Well, it's not necessarily permanent, but the advancement of devotional life is not retained if a person deliberately blasphemes another devotee. Vaishnava aparad can destroy, actually, one's devotional advancement. There's no doubt about that. And as long as one remains as an aparadi, he can never be accepted back into the realm of devotional service. He would have to come to the point of recognizing that he's an aparadi and then seeking out the persons that he's offended and apologize and get their forgiveness, just like Durvasa Muni. He could not be saved even by the even by Lord Narayan himself. He was being pursued by Sudarsan Chakra, and he was able to penetrate the Vaikuntha Lokas. I mean, who, you know, what kind of a personality is Devasa Muni? He could go by his own will, cover the entire material universe and penetrate to the spiritual world. But still he couldn't be excused except by going back to Maharaj Ambarish and begging his forgiveness. So Vaishnava aparad is very serious, and it can destroy one's spiritual advancement, and it's very, very difficult to overcome. So we have to be extremely careful. Accidental fall downs are one thing, but deliberate Vaishnava aparad is a whole different category. Okay, we're going to finish there. It is time for greeting the deities. I see some of the ladies are wearing yellow today for the occasion of the Sant Panchami. Very nice. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
উনি 1504 শতাব্দে অশ্বিন শুক্লা দ্বাদশীতে উনি হচ্ছে তিরোভাব লীলা প্রকাশ করেন এবং ওইখানে বর্ণনা আছে যে শান্ত স্নিগ্ধ জ্যোতির মধ্যে দিয়ে মনে হচ্ছে শ্রীমতী রাধারানী স্বয়ং করুণাময় শ্রীমতী রাধারানী